All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. And welcome to the SLS Cast, episode 1. I am your host, Matt.
Oh, and this is Tim.
Outstanding. Way to be drinking on the first episode there.
Oh, you gotta wake up and have your morning Tito's, man. That's how you do it.
Yeah, Tito's to start the day.
Exactly.
Indeed. Is there any other way?
Probably. But in the rule of Thursday, it's Thursday Tito's. Friday, you know, I guess margarita is always associated with Friday, I would think. I think that's the staple of Friday drinking.
Better than Rebecca Black associated with Friday, which unfortunately we would probably never ever get away from.
Rebecca Black. Oh, God. Why did you have to show me that video? Like...
Because it's important that we, above all, stay in touch with all the pop culture and entertainment stuff that goes on.
Oh.
We are going to attempt to do a movie podcast here and everything.
So. Because we all need to know that Friday comes after Thursday and before Saturday,
when Sunday is the day after that.
God. I've heard better music on Lamb Chops Playwall. I mean...
I think... Maybe that kind of gives me an idea. Perhaps maybe I could get the music to Friday, just the background track.
And then
play either "This Is the Song That Never Ends" for lyrics over it, or just Lamb Chops Play Along for 3 minutes. You know, it's Lamb Chops Play Along, goes on with fun and sing along. Yeah. So
yep.
Yes. All right. Well, so as you can hear. We do like to have a good time. I apologize. I'm getting a little bit over a cold. That's why this episode is arriving late. So it's all my fault. Don't blame Tim. Unless you want to blame Tim, and then I'm okay with that. But okay. So this is the SLS Cast. To fill everyone in on what an SLS is.
It sounds like a sexual disease, Matt.
Yes. We have a proud sponsor. It's Valtrex. Take it in doses.
Valtrex. And also by Beano.
Yes. That's it. So, not really. SLS actually stands for Silver Lenticular Screen. And when coming up with a title for this show, we were trying to think of something that was hip and cool, but, you know, that had relevance in classic cinema, because we're going to be talking a lot about classic cinema, but also relevance today, because we're also going to talk about movies for today, which I think is pretty cool. So the SLS part is where that kicks in, is it stands for Silver Lenticular Screen, which is the original style of screen. That had the actual silver particulates embedded in it because it was the best reflective surface for original movies. And it also has an aluminum counterpart. You know, for people who don't want to use silver, they use aluminum. But so that's where you got the term silver screen. And most people have at least heard of that term. Now, that's how it ties in to back then. How it ties into today is that it also turns out to be the best reflective surface for 3D movies. So the screen itself is starting to make a comeback because there are so many people out there who enjoy 3D movies. I don't know why they do, but they do. And now everybody has to pay an extra $3. Good job, Hollywood.
Good job, Hollywood.
So that's all I got. Sorry.
Good job, corporate management of Hollywood.
Right. Yes.
George Lucas, tip of the hat to you.
I'm going to give George Lucas a pass on this one. Lucasfilm does not do.
It doesn't. Thank
3D.
Well, you know, he is converting all of the Star Wars movies and releasing them in 3D.
That is because he is. I think at some point in his life he thought that he would have a chance to do some artistic stuff and be seen as a true visionary beyond Star Wars. And then he went and did episodes 1, 2, and 3 and exposed himself for the one trick pony that he was. Now, it's a fabulous trick pony to only have one trick for. And moviedom and the world will forever be thankful for it. But he just flat out exposed himself as a one trick pony. So now I think he's just come to terms with that and he accepts it and he's just going to just make his money and go away. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go see him. I'm not going
to
lie.
It's going to be real hard for me to watch episodes 1, 2, or 3. I'm hoping he doesn't do those.
Yeah, he's going to release them in, I guess, chronological order.
Maybe we'll get the Phantom edit. Oh, maybe if he does the Phantom edit,
Anakin,
then I'll see the first one.
I'm not gonna lie, I kind of enjoyed the Phantom Menace only because it wasn't as special effects blue screen heavy as the next two were.
No, it was only completely blue screened.
No, it was not. They shot a lot of stuff on a stage and on set. The episode one, yeah. And they actually had Yoda as a puppet than a completely CGI.
All right. Yes, they did do shooting. But, like, when you know things about the stupid movie, like, for example, the fight with Darth Maul at the end, the only person who's really there is Darth Maul. They CGI'd the faces of Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor.
Oh.
They CGI'd the faces on there. That's not them.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's just terrible. Alright, so you know what the now you know what the SLS stands for in SLS Cast. We're not going to be talking about it in every episode, so come back and listen to it here. A little bit about your hosts. Tim, take it away.
I currently go to a university where I'm studying film and television with a minor in history. I grew up in film and television. I've been in a few TV shows, worked on some film. I have family that is currently working on film, and I will be, I'm actually stationed in Tejas right now, the great state of whiskey, sausage, and Germans, I guess. There's a large population of Germans in Texas, so I guess that's enough to say I am within the population of the Germans. And I hope you guys enjoy the show. Matt and I should bring a considerable amount of knowledge of at least classics and really good films, and actually knowledge about really crappy films that we can all reflect on and enjoy and hopefully have a good time.
Well said, sir. Well said. I am also currently going to college, but I am, unlike Tim, an old person. And I decided to go back to school so that I could get a full-on history degree. So I'm history with minor in nothing, because I figure I'm not that cool. So that's where I'm at, but I also too grew up with movies. I have watched movies and television a lot growing up. Yes, I did go outside as well, though I'm not exactly sure when I managed to do this, because when you look up the amount of movies that Tim and I have watched together is about easily 4,000 movies. That's a lot of movies to have watched in your life. So, and there's a lot of crossover in there. It's good that there's not a lot of crossover as well. I mean, I'd say it's probably 60-40, 60% of the movies we've watched together. So that's going to leave a good 1,000, 1,200 movies that we'll be able to talk about that neither one of us one or the other hasn't seen. So, yeah. So that's going to be good, I think. I also live in Texas, where it's sunny, whether you like it or not, and hot, whether you like it or not. Welcome to Texas. So
that's why we watch so many movies.
Yes, I think that does, you know, indicate a lot of the reason for watching movies. But let's see, I'm married, got some kids, and that's about it. Work nights, weekends, stay home with kids during the day and go to school. That's my life right now. Pretty simple. So, that's a little bit about us, your hosts. So, hopefully you will know why we think we can do a movie podcast, you know. And we also are going to hope that you enjoy it. So, we're going to do some wonderful things with the show. The idea behind the show here is that we're going to have... you know, we realize that you guys have... that your listeners are going to have lives of your own. And so the idea is to try and keep the show to as close to 30 minutes as we can. That's obviously completely gone out the window this time. But, hey, you know, it's just kind of a get-to-know-us episode. So bear with it. We're always going to be doing probably about 3 to 4 movies that we're going to talk about a little bit in depth each week. One of them is a movie that I will have recommended to Tim. One is a movie that he has recommended to me. And then one's a movie that neither one of us has seen. And somewhere in there, that movie that neither one of us have ever seen will either be like a new movie that's releasing, that's coming out, or something that we've recommended to each other to, you know, that we just want to watch. For those of you who are Netflix fans, we are Netflix fans as well, and so a lot of the movies that we discuss, not all, but quite a few of them will be available for streaming. So, you know, when you hear about a lot of the movies we talk about, 99% of them, you should be able to stream it or get it via Netflix. So, that will help you, the listener, to, you know, give us your thoughts on the stuff that we talk about, especially if you haven't seen it, you know. So there's that. We will be, again, making sure to cover new movies as well. For example, this week we will be talking about the new X-Men First Class, because we went and saw that. And so there's that. So, again, 3 to 4 movies covered a week. We're also going to be doing, we also decided to cover a classic TV show. So every week we're going to recap an episode of The Twilight Zone, the original television series. That's right. And, do that. Well, if there's any cool movies and movie news and stuff like that, we'll cover that. Obituaries that might be pertinent for celebrities, we'll cover that. And we got a classic movie of the week that we'll recommend. It may be one or two, just depending on how good the movie is and whether or not... you know, Tim came up with it, or I came up with it, or if it was just so good, we both happened to recommend the same one. And I think this week is probably just going to be one, because Tim came up with a really good one. So, but the probably the coolest thing about this show is the segment we're going to call Three Square. Okay, now, everybody who's gotten past, like, 6th grade in math probably knows what 3 squared means. It's 3 times itself, which would be 9. Now, we know that what we are going to provide you has nothing to do with the number 9, but it's 2 people that we talk about in the film industry and 3 examples of their film. Or 3 examples of their work, rather, that we think are worthy of why we have mentioned these 2 people each week. Now, the fun part is the category changes. Okay, so we could do the best director, best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, supporting actress, so on and so forth. But that's too easy. So we like to do things like best hero, best villain, you know, best villainess, best heroine, whatever, could, you know, break it down that way. Or really difficult things like your favorite actor or actress that is still alive that has not made a movie in 10 years. So, these are going to be really, you know, interesting and fun categories, and to help the listeners at home or in their cars or on their phones or their iPhones or however you're listening to this show, you know, we're going to do the category a week in advance and then provide the answers to our categories the following week. So that this way, people have time to contact us and let us know what your picks were, and we can always mention people who, bring those on there. And we'll get to that later on. And, and have some fun with it. So this way the listeners at home get to play along. And gives us time to think about it, too. So this week, to just kind of get the ball rolling on it, the three squared was to make it real simple, our very first one was our favorite director. Now, the director couldn't be someone who was an epic director like Spielberg or Scorsese, Kubrick, whatever. Had to be someone who, is a really good director, has done some of your favorite films, but just couldn't be the epic people out there, because those are too easy. So, interestingly enough, I was really surprised with Tim's pick on this. Tim, what was your pick for your favorite director?
Danny DeVito?
Yes, it was. It was Danny DeVito. What were the movies you picked for him?
Well, he hasn't made many films, but the short list of films he made are actually pretty, pretty entertaining. But the three that I chose were Throw Mama from the Train as the first one. I had a hard time picking between Hoffa and The War of the Roses, but just for the sheer cinematic fun and entertainment I got out of War of the Roses, especially with, the correlation I have between arguing with women and all that couple fighting in the film, I went with Throw Mama from the Train. Because who hasn't had a big, drawn-out fight on a chandelier, I gotta say? And then the...
You mean War of the Roses?
Oh, yes. War of the Roses.
Otherwise, that movie would have been called Throw Mama from the Chandelier. So.
Indeed. Yes, War of the Roses. And also, then the last one being Death to Smoochie, with...
Yes,
Edward Norton and Robin Williams, because that's a very interesting pair, I think. And the idea kind of having a kind of like a violent confrontation between Barney and Howdy Doody, for some reason, that kind of,
Howdy Doody, huh? You're going me. With Howdy Doody on that?
Yeah.
With the plethora of children's... television. I mean, I don't know. Well, I'm thinking Robin Williams was much closer to like freaking Romper Room or H.R. Puffin stuff than
H.R. Puffin stuff. I actually used to watch H.R. Puffin stuff.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. He was. I think he was supposed to be that colorful kind of a character, not Howdy Doody. But whatever.
Well,
sure.
It's just something more like, hey kids, pick, let's sir. Get around and.
It is your pick.
For how I don't. I'm not up in the gang with, children.
Yeah, that's like saying I wasn't a kid. I do not know what things like Sesame Street are. Because I wasn't a kid. You don't have to bring it current or anything. But the purple, but Barney thing is just that's easy.
That was
what he was calling attention to.
It's your puffin stuff. What was the other Sid and Marty Krofft show about the bees?
Oh, jeez.
The Bugaloos? Was it the... or?
Yeah, it might have been Bugaloos. The one that sticks out for me with the bees, though, is this was this old Nickelodeon show when Nickelodeon first came on called Pinwheel. And they had some bees that were on that one, too.
Lost me on that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, Pinwheel is probably a little before your time there, son. It's all right. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay, Grandpa.
Hey, it is what it is. Yeah, can't help that. Let's see here. So, I picked, however, Harold Ramis. And Harold Ramis definitely has done some movies. Not a lot of people realize who Harold Ramis is, though. most people my age or older are going to go, wait a minute, did you just say E-Gun? Did you really? E-Gun? That's right. E-Gun from the Ghostbusters. This man has done some amazing directorial stuff. I mean, this guy, his first movie was Caddyshack. Okay? So, you gotta give some credit to the guy who did Caddyshack, alright? But the movies that I picked for him, okay, he's done a lot of movies. He did the Analyze This, Analyze That movies, Multiplicity, stuff like that. So, I mean, there's some really good movies. Also, like, Danny DeVito. Not a whole bunch of them. Probably about a dozen movies that he's done. So, Danny DeVito in that regard. Not a whole bunch of movies, but there's some really good ones in there. So the three that I picked were Vacation. That's right, the original National Lampoon's Vacation.
Whoa.
That's right. Groundhog Day, which I'm sorry, but that has probably got to be my second favorite Bill Murray movie.
In your first being?
The Man Who Knew Too Little.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm sorry, I just really, really like that movie. I mean, you know, sometimes just simple movies are just what the doctor ordered. And, you know, people expect a lot more from movies, and a lot of times they miss the subtlety of movies like that, and it's a shame because those are some of the best hidden gems. The third one for me was kind of like you, Tim. I was kind of hard to pick between the two, and I was kind of having a rough one between Bedazzled and Analyze This, but I think that Bedazzled wins out, mainly because the overall story was, I don't know, had a better feel-good ending, so to speak. So, that's why I went with Bedazzled. Analyze This is a great movie, don't get me wrong, but and probably more critically acclaimed than Bedazzled, but for me, that's what I went with. So, there you go. That is how a three-squared segment works. There wasn't nine anywhere in there, but, I suppose we could say some German no's if you want. Nine! So there you go.
Nine.
And that's right, it's Lame Joke Day on the SLS cast. Come on, you don't know the words, bring it on. Anyway, so there's that. All right, so let's talk about some movies. The movie they care about most at this point would be X-Men First Class, since we said we already saw it. So, because of that, we're going to save it for last. Tim, I recommended a movie to you last week. What movie was that?
Arsenic and Old Lace.
Ah, what a movie. Phyllis N. Sir, tell us a little bit about it and a little bit of what you thought about it.
Okay, Arsenic and Old Lace. The movie had me at the opening titles. I mean, the movie takes place on Halloween, so it's technically a Halloween film. And I might have to say, it has to be probably my favorite Halloween genre type of picture. But the film stars the lovely, charming, willing to have a slight man crush on, which I'm sure Cary Grant would have appreciated, crush on him, because he's just a charming guy. But I fell in love with Priscilla Lane, that the foxy lady and she would be the equivalent. She wore the equivalent to pantsuits that pantsuits are today, but they were sexy as can be back in the 50s and 40s. But the film itself is about this couple falls in love. Cary Grant's character is very anti-marriage. He wrote in magazines, he published books about, being against marriage and why people should never marry. But they decide to get married. Well, before they go on their honeymoon, he stops by his family's house to fill in his aunts about, him getting married. And they were going off to Niagara Falls. So while he's there, he comes across basically this secret that his aunts had, and their secret was that they would poison via wine, where they would put arsenic in it. They would poison men. And what they would do is that they would get their crazy cousin, Uncle Teddy, who was basically, you know, he was a mentally challenged. He was just not
delusional.
All there.
Exactly. Delusional. Yeah.
He thought he was Teddy Roosevelt, President Teddy Roosevelt. So they would have him build these trenches, basically in the basement, and to you know, cousin Teddy, he was building a new lock for Panama Canal, and you know that's just kind of an example of the genius of the film. And basically, it's just a madcap thing about Cary Grant's character. His name was Mortimer Brewster. Basically, he's just trying to keep, you know, the police from finding out. You know, just kind of like he's dealing with this madcapness of, you know, finding out that his aunts are killers, you know, trying to keep, you know, people from finding out about it, trying to keep his aunts from killing people. And at the same time, he has a brother who is actually hideous. Like, he grew up to be, like, this hideous kid. And he ends up getting together with Professor, played by the great Peter Lorre, and he basically makes him look like, you know, Frankenstein's monster. Bela Lugosi, I believe they keep mentioning. And he's actually himself a murderer. And basically what he would do is he would kill people and use their skin to create a new face. I mean, the movie kind of sounds like a horror film, but it's actually a hysterical comedy based off a play, actually. And it just made me happy. Like, I've never been so happy about, you know, the result of people dying in a long time.
Well, you know, the old ladies, they were just doing the kind and charitable thing, you know.
They were. And they did it in such a cutesy, sweet way as well. You know, so we heard you had, you know, you have some dead bodies in the basement. Some dead bodies? We have 12 dead bodies down there. It's going to be awfully crowded if we add more. You know, it's just great.
And the beauty of this is that he still hasn't given anything about the movie away. So if you want to see this movie, the key to the movie is watching Brewster deal with everything that happens. That's the hilariousness of the movie is to watch how his character how Cary Grant's character has to deal with what's going on. And it's worth watching, no matter if you think you know, well, geez, Tim's just told you everything. No, he hasn't told you. He's just told you the scenario. What the movie is how he has to deal with it. And it is priceless. So I am very, very glad that movie made you so happy, sir. Very glad.
It did. It tickled. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes.
It just tickled.
That's awesome. That is awesome. And let us see here. I now also had to watch a movie, and the movie that I got to watch was Ian McKellen's very, very bold version of Richard III, which was in 1995. And I had not seen... I am familiar with Shakespeare. I understand what Richard III is about. Great. but I had not seen this particular version of the movie. I've actually only seen most of, not even all of, the Laurence Olivier version. So I suppose I could probably go back and finish that too. Probably have to rewatch it, really. At any rate, neither here nor there. So, I found three great surprises in this movie. Okay, the first and foremost was that Annette Bening could act. I did not know that. I was completely blown away. Wow. Okay, that was amazing.
So she didn't show her acting chops in Dick Tracy?
Was she in that? I thought that was Madonna.
I thought she was in Dick Tracy.
Is she in Dick Tracy too?
Because I thought that's how she met her husband.
I thought it was Bugsy. No, that was maybe that was just the first movie they did together after they were married.
Oh. Yeah, she was in Bugsy. don't know. I have to look that up.
Well, okay, well, at any rate,
continue, and I will look that up.
Yes, you go right on ahead and look that up, because I'm, yeah, I don't know. I've never, I, you know, about the closest thing to acting I'd ever seen her do was Regarding Henry, and even then, I watched that movie for Harrison Ford, not her. So,
yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm wrong. You're right.
Okay. Woo! Yay! And anybody who knows me knows that that's exactly how I like the world to be. So, anyway, second surprise for me, which was not really a surprise, but just the pleasantness of it, was how delightful, delightfully evil, So I Married an Axe Murderer, evil, like the fruit of the devil, evil, that Ian McKellen could be as playing, you know, his wonderful evilness, you know. I don't know, it's just so good. I mean, from the part where he starts the movie and, you know, now is the winter of our discontent and everything, and, you know, you actually get to see the jest and the line and you know, and how he played it. And then he wanders off, and he goes into the bathroom, and he's by himself, and because he's a hunchback, he's not an attractive dude. He's a hunchback in the play, and hunchback was basically the easy way out for making someone disfigured and undesirable back in the, you know, 1500s when the play first came out. Here they've give him a bit of a hunch, but basically he's kind of got a crippled arm, you know, and everything. And so you see him, it was just funny, you get to see the entirety of his character in the first, you know, 3 minutes. And yet it doesn't matter, because even if you know what's going to happen, watching what he's going to do to make everything happen and how Ian McKellen plays it is just ridiculous. You see him go to the bathroom, and, you know, he's bitching, basically, about the status of his life and, you know, what he's done and how he's going to go about making the things. And he's, while he's doing it, he's fiddling with himself to go to the bathroom. And, you know, and so he does it, and he does it, but he has to do it all one-handed because he's basically crippled on his left side. I think it's left arm. And you see him, and he lets, and the way it was written, and Ian McKellen wrote this with Richard Lon Crane or something. I'm pretty sure it's Lon Crane.
Yeah, yeah.
Another good English personality in the movie world. And they wrote it based off of a stage play. Now, I can't remember if Ian McKellen wrote the stage play as well. Did he?
I'm not sure about that, actually.
But this was a very particular adaptation for the movie version that was done from a very specific play adaptation. And the reason why I say adaptation is because it takes place in roughly the 30s. It's supposed to be taking place in roughly the 1930s after a civil war in England. So they kind of brought it up to a little bit up to date so that they could have the fun with it that they did, because they had a lot of fun with this one.
They did, and I think you can tell how much fun they're having by how some of the actors look into the camera. Like, especially when the first time when Ian McKellen's in that bathroom.
Yeah, that's, you know, what I was just about to say.
Doing, and he just looks at the camera, and then all you see is just pure freaking evil. Even when you know that, you know, Richard III is one of the, I mean, I think that is probably my favorite Shakespearean villain, I would have to say. But even if you know that he's the bad guy, it's just that one look into that camera and you're like, holy crap, man, heads are gonna roll. This guy means business.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole thing, is that he looks into the mirror, you know, as he dries his hand off. You can see him washing his hand in the sink single-handedly, and he dries his hand off, and he's looking in the mirror as he talks to you, and basically that's when he turns around and looks again directly at the camera, because he's basically, even though he's talking to himself, he's talking to you, and you get to kind of be his invisible friend. You know, that's kind of how he wrote it, is that you get to be his invisible friend. And he's like, you know, if a villain I'm written, a villain I must be. I misquoted that terribly, but basically, you know, he's announcing, since I can't be a hero and looks like I'm a villain, may as well just be a villain all the way. And you're just like, you are going to be just deliciously evil, aren't you? And then he immediately follows off by getting his brother sent off to the tower.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he turns around and looks at the camera again. And right after that, he's like, you know, he's like, and now I'm going to go marry the wife of the man that I just shot in the head 2 minutes ago. So have a nice one. And he admits that he does this even, you know, even as she knows he's who he is. And it's just amazing to watch this guy at work. Ian McKellen plays it brilliantly. Wrote it brilliantly. And so that was just the pleasantness of it. That was the surprise for me. Now,
how did you think about the ending?
I thought the ending was really interesting. I liked how they kind of changed I like how they changed the style of the ending, but because, you know, they have the big battle at the end, you know, the night before Richards had the visions, all that good stuff and everything, and he gets out there, and I thought that the irony of being able to leave a horse, a kingdom for my horse,
yeah,
in that era, because they're obviously there's tanks and, you know, and cars and, you know, and jeeps out, you know, all that kind of stuff going around and everything, and he gets stuck, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a horse. I thought that was probably one of the most brilliant little twists that they could have pulled on that, was that at the end of the day, you know, the stupid, you know, the same thing that could have saved him in the original play and the way that things worked out for Shakespeare would be the same way that they could bring it all back together again. And I liked it. I was pleasantly surprised by that. So
and then the men who would eventually be king, you know, after he tries to shoot him, he just looks at the camera with that smirk. And I just love it. I just love how they did it. And then the song could not have been perfect, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was a good choice. I thought it was a good choice. But I still haven't gotten to my third surprise yet. My third surprise for this was once again seeing how, at least in America, maybe overseas it's different, I don't know, but I get the feeling that in America, Robert Downey Jr. is probably one of the most underrated actors in the history of general movies. General moviegoerdom. General moviegoerdom, I guess, you know? Because, you know, yes, people will be like, oh, yeah, that was Iron Man, da-da-da-da. But this guy, he's got chops, dude. I mean, the man can play a part. I mean, he can, without breaking a sweat, dude. I mean, this guy, he can turn around and, you see him in Sherlock Holmes recently. You see him in Iron Man 2, and you're like, oh, yeah, okay, well, he's great. You know, he has a lot of fun with that stuff. But people just don't realize, you know, the depth of character portrayal that he can do. Like, you were referring to Chaplin. You know, here he's Earl Rivers here in Richard III. I mean, these are, I mean, and the flair that he plays, the Earl is ridiculous. I mean, the brilliance of how he viewed that character, and to some extent, I'm sure Ian McKellen and Richard Lonergan as well. But I mean, you could see that the man doesn't care. You know, he does what he wants and he does what he likes, and that's the end of it. And you can see how it irritates people. And it's great. I don't, you know, so. Three surprises out of that movie. Excellent movie recommendation. And then there was the movie we watched together.
What was it?
I wish I could forget too.
Oh, Stone. Stoner. Or Stone.
Good Stone. Lord, dude.
Stone.
Stone.
Stone. Oh, wait. Maybe you have to be stoned to actually kind of.
Yes, you could possibly have to be a stoner to enjoy Stone. I don't know. It's not, but it's not a funny movie. It's not like Half-Baked or anything. Okay, so...
Should we start off with the... Because I can give some positives about the movie, and then I can turn it over to you to completely... masticate it. I mean, there were aspects of it that I did enjoy. Like, I thought the performances were enjoyable. I mean, I gave it 50-50, I suppose. Or 60-40. 40 being good and 60 being bad.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. So let's explain what Stone is about. Okay, Stone is a movie featuring Robert De Niro, Ed Norton, and Mia Jovovich. So you're immediately thinking, which is what I was thinking when I and I apologize for this for recommending it as the movie we should watch. You're thinking, how can it go wrong? I mean, you know, and the movie is about Edward Norton. He plays a man who was convicted of arson and dubiously involved in the murder of his grandparents over a drug-induced robbery some years before. Mia Jovovich is his wife, who loves him and will do anything to help him get out. And Robert De Niro plays his parole officer. All three of them are actually a little mentally unbalanced, and they basically are... Everybody's trying to play their own game, and it is all in an attempt to get Ed Norton's character out of jail on parole. So, there you go. That's the story. That's essentially the plot of the movie. Without trying to give anything away for someone who may want to put themselves through the torture of seeing this film. So what did you think of the movie, Tim?
It had solid performances, I thought. A big thing I had about the film was that there was not a grounded character. Every character had a problem going on. So to me, it was kind of hard for me to identify with anybody. You know, kind of like root for somebody, and it just seems like, I don't know. I mean, you might be able to argue with me on this, you know, what I'm about to say. But I kind of think every movie just needs somebody you kind of have to identify with. I mean, it doesn't matter if you identify with them at the beginning, but then by the end you completely change your mind on them. Just for some way, you just need a ground. You know, just someone, you know, to keep you grounded and to kind of, I don't know, just to be there for you during the movie. I don't know, that just sounds ridiculous, but it was just a strange
movie. I think what you said originally was more apt. Someone that you can root for in some way, shape, or form. You can either root for the bad guy because they're the bad guy. You can root for the good guy because they're the good guy. You can root for someone because you identify with them, or you can root for someone even if you can't identify them because, you know, you feel for them for whatever their situation is. I think that you just need to you need to have some connection that causes you to want to either root for or root against someone, and that is the problem with this movie, is that the movie is too good. Okay, now that seems like a bit of an oxymoronic statement. Or a contradiction in terms, whatever. But you gotta look at it from this point of view. People go to see a movie because there is an element of escape in it.
Yeah.
Okay. Even in a movie, let's take Sling Blade. Okay, that's a similar in tone kind of a movie to Stone. What made Sling Blade good for me was that you had some, even though it was a very, very real movie, very real life movie, very, you know, well written, well scripted, and in all other ways, just watching someone live their life, there was still an element of escape because the central character was someone that no one watching the movie was.
I gotcha.
With Stone, the exact same thing. Three very real people living very real lives with very real problems and very real, you know, goings on, and very well written, very well performed, very well executed, but I just felt like I was watching real life, and people watch a movie to escape real life. They watch reality TV to pretend to watch real life. That is what was wrong with Stone. That is why I did not like it, is because it was too good. It was too much like real life, and it made me feel like I'm sitting there watching just the three most depressing people on the face of the planet live their life. Live their pointless lives. With no outcome. Because their lives continue. Their lives. You jumped in the middle of their lives and you left after, you know, a couple of weeks of watching them live. To no avail.
Yeah, there was no, like, really gratification.
Exactly. There was no payoff. There was no reason to... There was no reason to have watched that movie.
Yeah.
And that is why I didn't like it. It was too good. So does that kind of justify your view of the movie?
Yeah. No, I would have to agree. I really would. It's not a feel-good movie.
It has nothing to do with being a feel-good movie. I can live with a movie that... If it's executed properly, I can live with a movie that doesn't have a happy ending, so to speak.
Yeah.
I can live with a movie that can be thought provoking and kind of leave it open ended, like I stated before we started the show. But I can't deal with a movie that's done so well and done with so much that you just sat there feeling like you watched somebody living their life and. For no reason. What do I care? That's great. So I get to watch a parole officer guy and a con and his wife live their life. Okay. Thanks, but no thanks. All right. Now the moment you've all been waiting for. Drumroll, please.
Wait, Outer Limits or X-Men?
I don't know. We didn't do Outer Limits. We did Twilight Zone.
I mean, Twilight Zone.
Nah, that's a whole another segment. So we'll be nice. We'll jump right into the. We'll give them all the movies. So, X-Men First Class. Better than the sequel. The sequel. You ready for the lame joke? The sequel is going to be X-Men Coach Class. X-Men Coach.
Starring Jerry Van Dyke.
Exactly. Even though I was doing the Dick Van Dyke theme song, it's okay. It's all right.
Hey, coach.
That's right. So, all right.
Okay, before we start talking about X-Men.
Oh, that's terrible. What? We've made these people wait for all this time, and now you're going to hold them off again. All right, go ahead.
Wasn't the cameo of Wolverine... perfect?
Oh, it's priceless.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. Or leave me the fuck. Oh, I just loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it.
That was priceless. Yes.
I just had to get that out.
Very cool. So, X-Men First Class. And for anybody who doesn't know what X-Men First Class is about, it is essentially it's not quite a reboot, but it is a little bit of a retcon. For the X-Men story, this movie takes place in the '60s, and basically kind of gives the origins of what would officially become the X-Men. So there you go. So that's you get to see how they all came together, and I thought. Especially in terms of the editing of the original X-Men movie footage for Magneto's backstory was ridiculously well done.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I definitely agree.
So, yeah. So that's why I say it's not a reboot. it is a bit of a retcon because they changed some of the stuff regarding like the Wolverine Origins movie and stuff like that, but it's not an actual reboot because they've done it as a prequel and they can lead all the way up to the X-Men movie and they've got 40 years of time that they get to play with that. So, but they retconned a lot of the stuff, and a retcon is it's called retroactive continuity, and it comes from comic books where they retroactively change the timelines and the histories of the characters. So they did not completely reinvent them. They did not come back and make it like they did with Star Trek, where they put them in a different time universe so that they could create their own timeline. Those are reboots. They just kind of changed certain parts of the stories of certain characters so that it would flow with their new timeline, which is still a legit prequel leading into the original X-Men movies, so. As evidenced by the Wolverine cameo.
Exactly.
So, that being said, now that you have a little bit of an overview of the movie, what'd you think, Tim?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed the whole... the movie to me was kind of a flashback to early James Bond in many ways.
Oh,
where,
yes.
You know, like in the James Bond movies, you know, well, like in X-Men, like the bad guy's in a submarine, and the only people in the submarine that are, like, you know, driving it or doing the little controls are his, like, henchmen, pretty much. You know, and it's like you're seeing like a devil-looking guy with, like, the big ass like headphones and turning knobs, random knobs. Not, you know, he's just in the back fiddling with.
But
knobs,
they,
you
but
know?
They did.
I just loved
but
it.
They also did like the ultimate in evil guy, you know, in or you know bad guy chic, where it's the operating area and everything, and then the door opens and it's the plush little, you know, Playboy suite, you know, and everything with the couch and the bar and the bookshelves all lined, and then the, you know, with the bearskin rug on the carpet and everything. Yeah, definitely very, very, very well done in that regard.
Yeah, and every time I watched them, I mean, whenever I was watching the film, I just thought, I'd like to see Matthew Vaughn, the director, make a Bond movie.
Oh, never. Could work.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was very entertaining. I mean, I thought the length was perfect. I thought how everything was set up was perfect. I loved, you know, the World War II references. I loved the Cold War references. I just liked how everything just kind of flowed together. To me, it did not feel like a comic book movie at all. It just felt like, you know, just like a fun, classic, retro superhero movie, I guess. You know, to where it doesn't really... it doesn't fit in with all the other... It doesn't fit in with Iron Man. It doesn't fit in with Thor. It doesn't fit in with the previous X-Men. It doesn't fit in with Spider-Man or any of that stuff. It's just... It's just fun. It's just very sleek and stylish. I thought Kevin Bacon was tremendous as the bad guy.
I really, like, for not even having known that he was in this movie to seeing this movie, I cannot believe. I would be really upset if this guy doesn't at the very least get like a Golden Globe nod or something for like best supporting. At least just give him the nomination. He doesn't have to win, but he deserves a nomination for. Like best supporting actor or something, because he just did a holy crap good job. I mean,
yeah,
he was so ridiculously believable as you know, as his character. And what made it even more interesting was the like all the languages that they had to speak and everything going back and forth, and It was ridiculous.
It was. And I guess with a lot of these types of movies, it did have a couple corny things. And to me, the reason why it was not a perfect movie was the corny business about being beautiful, being the, you know, a beautiful human being, and you look beautiful the way you are, and you know, just that stuff.
So Christina Aguilera's song "Beautiful" could have been playing in the background, yes, but at the same time, they had to do that. That's actually something that's at the heart of X-Men as a whole. That's at the heart of the franchise. Yeah. Is from the comic book perspective and everything, is that it is about, do we as humans, being the dominant species on the planet, for better or for worse, do we think that we could appropriately deal with mutant abilities? Or do, and conversely, can mutants deal with being mutant? Would deal with being mutants? And you can obviously pull out mutant, drop in black person, pull out black person, drop in Jewish, pull out race and put in rich person or poor person or what, you know. But the idea is that, can you accept yourself as you really are, number one? And number two, you know, can you accept, you know, can you appropriately deal with someone who is bigger and better than you that just wants to live without destroying it? And that juxtaposition of ideas goes to the very heart of X-Men. And so I tolerate that. I don't look at it as being as corny as that is. I don't know. Maybe tolerate's not even...
Appreciate.
I can appreciate that. And so that kind of stuff, yeah. Could they have written it better? Yes. But did it bother me? No. So that's where I would go with that. The one thing, though, that... go ahead.
Oh, no, go for it.
I was just going to say, the only thing that, the only kind of plot device that confused me, really, in the movie was Kevin Bacon. Did he give himself his mutant power?
Because you really, you don't know what happened, really.
Because he comes back, you know, because, you know, I don't, without giving too much away, Kevin Bacon's the bad guy. And he... His power is just being able to absorb energy and then release it as he chooses. So, but where it fools me, I mean, maybe he was wearing makeup, but he appears as an older person at the beginning of the movie, and then for the rest of the movie, he's his regular 40-something self. So, yeah.
Well, he does make a comment that the energy he captures keeps him young. So they do say that, but yeah, like you were saying,
but
they don't explain how he
became. Because if that were the case, why would he look older at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe he did some experimentation.
I don't know. That is one plot hole that kind of, I was like, huh? I mean, I let it go, but I was, you know, because I wanted to watch the movie, but I was a little...
Yeah. And I hope Oliver Platt turns up in the next movie. I always enjoy Oliver Platt.
Him in that movie, I was like, heck yeah. And then I don't think he's turning up in the next movie. Gotta be honest with you. So.
Yeah, that was kind of a fall drop, or long drop. And when the black dude died... They made one of the bad guys makes a comment about slavery. Like, do you want to stay here and be slaves? And the camera zooms in on the black guy. That, like, my theater was packed, and I went to, like, a 10:45 Sunday evening showing, and it was packed. And some black people got up and left because they thought that was racist. And they did not come back in. And I thought that was interesting.
Oh, good. Are you kidding me? Oh, jeez. Okay, since you now are listening to this show, just so you know here, we're not politically correct. The political correctness does not exist in this forum. Respect does, but not political correctness. That is about the stupidest thing I have ever heard.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. I mean, you know, I totally did not, I mean, I wasn't thinking that whatsoever. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, whenever you
see
your slavery.
Well, yes, but
and...
he said it because, you gotta remember, that movie's taking place in 1962. Okay?
Yeah, no,
Cuban
exactly. Exactly.
Time. And yeah. The Civil Rights Bill didn't get passed until 64.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was something directly aimed at him to convince him because of what he would have been experiencing as a black man.
Yeah, no, exactly, yeah. And, like, it was funny because right when it happened, you know, like, you know, as it seemed to carry on, people were just like, you know, they weren't sure how to react. And it's like, you live in Houston, I mean, a city, Houston, Texas. You know, we're like, this is like the biggest melting pot in Texas. Actually, you know, I mean, am I right to say that in the South, Houston is the mecca of cultures and community, you know, different ethnic communities? You know, you got the
ethnicity. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a huge Vietnamese community, huge Chinese community, massive Latino community, black community, German community. There's a huge Polish community here. You know, it is unreal the amount of people. I mean, we're the largest city in the state. We're the fourth largest city in the United States. And, you know, that someone would get offended by a line... You know, and maybe, who knows, maybe they got a text or something and it just kind of was convenient that they walked out at that time, but if that was the case, that these people actually were offended by a line about slavery, that is the stupid, I mean, you know, you just can't win with some people, so.
Yeah. Oh, well.
What are you going to do?
Oh, well. Exactly. But all in all, the film was terrific. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. If I have time to go see it again... Which, seeing how I have actually a few movies I plan on seeing before our next show, I would totally go see it again. I mean, it was that enjoyable.
Oh, I agree. Wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly yeah. Agree. So, awesome. So there we go. There's the four movies. All right. Was there any relevant movie news that you wanted to talk about this time around? Or?
Yeah, I kind of have... You know, how about this? I will go through and I will read a couple headlines, and if there's something that really strikes your fancy, we can go in depth about it. How about that?
Go ahead. I can't help you. I don't know who you're talking about.
Darren Aronofsky. I can never get his last name. Like, it's, you know, it. He directed Requiem for a Dream, The Fountain, recently Black Swan. Tremendous director. He's actually, you know, he has these dream projects, and his goal is that he wants to make these big budget movies to where, you know, that'll accumulate a large amount of income so he can make his dream projects that, you know, are movies that a lot of people won't necessarily, I guess, produce, which is why he, which was the reason why he was signed on to do the sequel to Wolverine. He was going to do The Wolverine. Well, it turns out he is now shopping around a $130 million passion project called Noah, about Noah's Ark. And he's currently, I think, writing a graphic novel with artist Nico Henrichon. So, that was, you know, that should be, I mean, I'm guessing it's a graphic, maybe? I don't know, I like reading this article about it, I'm kind of getting like, you know, 300 meets biblical times, which could be interesting. I don't know. I didn't care for 300, so this might even go over my head, or it might be somewhat interesting. In other news, they're apparently wanting to get Leonardo DiCaprio as the villain in Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained. Will Smith has yet to be confirmed as the black slave who is basically on a, you know, he's wanting to kill the plantation owner who currently is holding, I believe, his wife and his child. Other actors that are in cahoots with possibly playing the lead are Chris Tucker and Jamie Foxx. I personally would love to see Chris Tucker play a really serious role. They're planning on doing a Daredevil reboot.
What's the reboot about Daredevil?
20th Century Fox. This is from Collider Guys. The oh yeah, you know, for movie news, we my big resource is Collider.com. If anybody feels free, you know, to suggest different websites, please do. I'm up for anything, and it's not just Collider I go to. I go through, you know, different places. But yeah, it looks like they're redoing Daredevil. I'm not going to lie, I kind of enjoyed the Ben Affleck Daredevil.
I liked it. I completely liked it. I thought Bullseye was a bit much. Yeah. But aside from Bullseye, that and they should have used the Big Show instead of Michael Clark Duncan. That really made me angry that they used Michael Clark Duncan. Not because... I think they used Michael Clark Duncan not because he was black, but because he's a very, very good actor. But it just, you know, aside from him being a good actor, you know, I don't know. It is a bit of, it's a bit of a catch-22, because I was mad because Kingpin's white. And then Jen's like, well, name one white dude that they could have gotten to play this part. And I'm like, I don't know. He's way too old now, but I would have liked to have seen Randall Tex Cobb do it. And she's like... And then I showed him who she was. I was like, hell no, he couldn't have done that. I'm like, well, I like Big Show. The Big Show could have done it. But I don't... Well, seriously, I mean, he's a 7.5-foot, you know, 530-pound white dude with his bald. It's perfect! You know. But maybe he can't act. So they went and got Michael Clark Duncan, who's, you know, also super huge, massive dude. Bald and everything. So...
See, I only ever saw Kingpin in, what was it, Spider-Man? Yeah, see, I always thought Kingpin was a Spider-Man villain. Mm-hmm. Oh.
So, yeah. Okay, so David Slade to direct Daredevil reboot, huh? Okay. David Slade is doing the Daredevil and the Wolverine.
Okay, and for other movie news, I'm sending you this link. It's the poster for the new, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo film, which did I show you? Did you see the trailer?
They
for
showed
it?
The trailer for it at the
beginning of
X-Men, and
I got psyched for it. I was actually shit, this could be awesome.
Well, yeah. I didn't realize it was Daniel Craig. I mean,
yeah.
So yeah.
All right, and in other news, Sacha Baron Cohen's making his next film called The Dictator, and it's basically.
So he's come up with a character that he's finally come up with a character that he hasn't exploited already. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Well, it's actually a I think it's supposed to be just a moot. Like it's not like in the vein of Borat.
Well,
or...
Yeah. I mean, see here, the film has Cohen once again reteaming with director Larry Charles, but it's Cohen's first movie that isn't based on one of his characters from the Ali G show. There you go. So he's finally found a character he hasn't exploited yet.
Exactly. And it kind of reminds me of The Great Dictator. If you've ever seen The Great Dictator, you got to see it. It's with Charlie Chaplin, and he plays dual roles. He plays the character of the tramp, and he plays a character that resembles Adolf Hitler called Henkel. And it is hysterical. It is so good. And it seems like it's not a remake, but it's kind of like a little bit of a spinoff from that. I don't know, but it should be pretty cool. I mean, I'm gonna look forward to it, but I might end up hating it because of, you know, it's Sacha Baron Cohen. He's just gonna You know, the joy of the Great Dictator was that there was a point to it. You know, Chaplin wanted to make a point. It was a social statement. He was standing up for, you know, what he was saying, what was not being said for the time. You know, I just kind of hope, which I am not holding my breath for, but I hope it's a little bit more of a crazy comedy that shows penises throughout it.
Well, so, okay, I did not like Ali G. I thought that was a... I didn't like it. I don't know. It wasn't for me. It wasn't my cup of tea. It wasn't my... I don't care which one. I didn't like it. I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think he was funny. I didn't think there was anything good about it. The loose redeeming quality of Ali G show was the little Borat segment. And so I did see the Borat movie.
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty funny. You know, okay, great, whatever. Way outlandish. Way funny. So, fine. But... the other one, I didn't see Bruno. That just didn't...
I kind of enjoyed
that.
Bruno.
That didn't even remotely look good to me, so... Was it even funny?
I did. I thought it was pretty funny. I laughed.
Well, maybe I'll watch that one then, just to check it out. But yeah, I mean, I tried watching the Ali G movie. I tried watching... I mean, it's not funny. I don't, you know... guess I just don't get it.
In other news, it looks like the director Steve Soderbergh, who directed Aaron Brockovich, he's Solaris. He's just directed a great deal of films. The Great Che, which I will be recommending that 4-hour movie to you in the future. It looks like the last movie he's going to do before he retires is... The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Wow, they're redoing that one.
Yeah,
huh?
And I don't know. I think George Clooney would be pretty cool in that. More likely, that's who he will get. And last but not least, for movie news, Sony moves forward with the sequel to Salt. Angelina Jolie showed interest in reprising her role. However, Philip Noyce will not.
The director. He's not. He initially thought he was wanting to do it, but then when they were able to do all the extra alternate ending stuff and intriguing stuff that he thought he wanted to explore, he was able to do that with the DVD release and kind of show off everything that all of his ideas. He backed out and decided that he didn't want to do it anymore. Bummer, because it's hard when you have a good team. There's a reason why it was a good team. And that's not to say that the next team won't be good. But, I don't know. It's going to be tough. What do you think?
It's going to be hard to beat, because Salt was... wasn't that the first movie we watched when we started this podcast?
Oh, yeah, it was the very first movie.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just such a surprise. And everybody was terrific in it. And it just... The pacing was... I don't know. I just have a feeling if they get somebody new, they're going to be... You know, they want to pull something else artistic with it and maybe change the pace up or change the direction of the storyline or make another, like, crazy twist to it that, you know, like, suddenly her father's alive and something about her father and this and that. And I don't know. And, yeah. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it just depends. You know, it just depends.
It can be very good, but without the same director, I'm gonna be hard pressed to think it's gonna be as good.
Yeah.
But exactly. You know, we'll see how it shapes up.
Yeah.
We'll see how it shapes up. So awesome. All right. Well, movie news. All right. Well, let's talk. Okay. So. We, as I said, this is the first episode, so we are going to talk about the Twilight Zone for our TV series. And you guys don't get the benefit of all of the rehearsals that we've done, so we're going to be talking about the same episode we've already talked about, but you don't know that. So first episode, season one episode one is called Where Is Everybody? And Earl Holliman guest starred for this episode, and it was basically about an Air Force test pilot. He's got amnesia. He finds himself wandering through a small town. He's trying to find people, can't find anybody, but the town is not at all what he thinks it is. I think that this is definitely, there's definitely a reason why Twilight Zone has been in the lexicon in the way that it has been for so many years, and several attempted reboots. There was the ill-fated movie back in the 80s. And this particular episode for me kind of embodies the whole thing. What do you think there?
It was just perfect in every way. I mean, it captured the creepiness. It was just an excellent kickoff to the entire series, I think. It was just something that was different for that time. You know, it was just something completely different. I mean, it touched with kind of like the war aspect of it, because it started in 1959, so it was like the height of the Cold War. So people were kind of paranoid, I suppose. So
they also hadn't gone to the moon yet either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Space was still being explored.
Yeah, so I cannot imagine how it was being like a, you know, like an 8-year-old kid who's into reading, like, you know, like, you know, like Buck Rogers, or, you know, just watching these old serials and these fun, you know, just being involved with, you know, reading and talking about aliens with kids in class, and then watching The Twilight Zone, and then just being completely inept and talking about, oh, well, you know, this could happen in war, you know, this is what they do in war, this is what they're testing, this is how they test patients and how they test soldiers. And it's just kind of mind-blowing about how, you know, like how crucial this series was in that part of time, I suppose. It was just awesome. Like, and this the first episode was just terrific.
I don't think I can agree anymore. It was just really well done, very just creepy enough, especially where, like I said, where he locks himself. He doesn't really lock himself, but he's kind of gotten himself stuck in the phone booth, and just a certain little aspects of tension building, and all of the, you know, and the shots, the wide angle shots, a lot of the close ups, and some of the just, you know, and they were used properly to really accentuate, you know, and heighten the tension in just the right ways. And, you know, you don't see a lot of that anymore.
Yeah.
It's really kind of a bummer. So, hopefully you guys will, you know, you listeners or listener, whatever, at this point, will, you know, start watching this show. We'd love to hear your thoughts on these episodes. We'll try and recap the episode, but by doing the recap, we, just like with the movies, we'll discuss the movies, but do our best to not give anything away, so that you can, you know, see what the, you know, so you can kind of get a feel for what the episode was about or what the movie was about, and based on what we think about it, if you want to go and watch it or not watch it, but we don't want to necessarily give anything away. And this one does have a bit of a twist ending to it, so pretty spiffy.
Indeed.
Pretty spiffy indeed. All right. We have made it. We've made it to the end of the episode here. We didn't have 3 deaths this week, but I'm not sure. I don't want to wait so long for celebrity deaths that, you know, somebody's been dead for a couple of weeks and they're like, oh, well, yeah, we already knew about that. So, James Arness has passed away. He passed away a couple of days ago. And he was Marshal Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke. So, you know, definitely something worth checking out if you want to see what classic television, classic Western TV was at its best. Gunsmoke is, you really can't go wrong with that, so I highly recommend checking that out. That was a show that ran for like either 20 or 30 years on TV, and was also a radio show before it was a television show. So it's got a ridiculous bit of longevity to it.
Yeah.
So, anybody who wants to check that out. So, James Arness, you will be missed. And I think that brings us pretty much to the end of the show. What do you think?
Dun, 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 dun. Oh, don't we have to announce what we're watching for next week?
Oh, yeah. Oh, and the 3 Squared segment announcement for next week. villains. Okay, we're not going to lie to you. We've already cheated and we know our answers, but we're going to make you wait for next week because it was a pretty easy one for us. But villain, your favorite actor who has played a villain. Now remember, the idea is that you can come up with three examples of their movies. Now if you can't, that's fine. But your favorite actor or actress who has played villains. They don't have to have exclusively played villains, but definitely has played villains a few times, and it's your favorite actor who plays a villain. So, and there's no limit, just your favorite actor or actress who's played a villain. And that's the Three Squared segment for next week. Let's see. The movies we are going to be watching next week, the movie we are watching together is The Nude Bomb, which was kind of like the movie culmination from the TV series of Get Smart. Tim recommended that, so good call there. And let's see here. I have recommended what movie for you, sir?
Johnny Dangerously.
That is right. Gosh, I can't wait for you to watch that movie. That's, we'll have fun talking about that. And then the movie that Tim recommended for me is HUD, featuring the one, the only, the only actor I know of who developed a successful salad dressing line, Paul Newman. So, yeah. I mean,
he can open up his own like Paul Newman store.
He could have. Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Okay. So thank you so much for listening and putting up with this. This episode is obviously going to be more than the 30 minutes. We may also just ditch the 30-minute thing altogether. We'll let you know as the series progresses. But obviously, with the introducing of ourselves and, you know, kind of letting you guys get to see what we're all about, this episode's definitely going to be longer than 30 minutes. You know, we'll see what we can do about that going forward. And thanks for listening. You can get a hold of us. You can visit us at slscast.com. You can email us at theslscast@gmail.com. We'll have Facebook coming up. We've got a page, but it's not called fully constructed yet. But you can also follow us at the SLS Cast for Twitter as well. So, until next time, we want to make sure to thank our music partners, Cries of Solace, who have provided us with the music that you've been listening to in the background, as well as our intro music and everything. They've been very cool. You can check them out at myspace.com/Cries of Solace. You can also look them up on Facebook. And thanks to all of our friends and family who have been supportive of this venture. Tim, is there anybody that you would like to specifically thank?
No,
you're just a one-man show. Outstanding. Okay. I'm a little bit more magnanimous. There's a few people there for me. Specifically, aside from the generic friends and family, you all know who you are. Got some buddies of mine. I used to do a podcast called The Wow Factor Show. And from The Wow Factor Show came the idea for this show. And so if it hadn't been for Chris and Jeremy, never would have stumbled across this idea that I have come to with Tim. So thanks for that, obviously, guys. Jeremy also had done some help with answering some technical questions about podcasting for me, so outstanding there. Good friend Rob, he's always making sure to look out for me. And then without Mike, my buddy Mike Ramirez, we would not have our connection with Cries of Solace. So thanks again there. And that is that, ladies and gentlemen. Anything else you'd like to add, Tim?
No, I think it'll be a, you know, I hope people enjoy it. And please, if you have any comments or questions or suggestions, feel free to, drop us a message or email or any of that good stuff. Just please don't hunt us down and track us down and, you know, all that creepy stuff. Well, maybe Matt. Matt might appreciate the...
I was going to say, I'm going to put up Tim's address on the website. So, you know, whatever you guys want to do. Unless you're hot. If you're hot, you're always...
Please, well, yeah, please come. I mean, I'm fine with that. Wall,
so, all right. Well, thank you again, everybody. We'll be seeing you next week. Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.